Welcome again, everyone, to this month's Living with Parkinson's meetup. I'm Chris Krueger, the senior manager for content at the Davis Finney Foundation. And like the panelists, I live with Parkinson's. I was diagnosed in 2020 and probably had symptoms since 2014. November is Caregiver Awareness Month, and the topic for this meetup is inspired by that. We're going to discuss the benefits and challenges of the different ways we have all found support in our communities while living with Parkinson's. But before we get started, I'm just going to ask the panelists to introduce themselves. And why don't we start with Larry today?
Hi, everybody.
Sorry, Larry, I put you on the spot.
Good to be here. Today we're in Toronto. We are the center of the universe because Taylor Swift is back for another resident series. So the city is all things Taylor Swift. So I'm staying at home and have been the last few weeks. But good to see everybody and welcome from Toronto.
You're not going to brave the traffic today, huh?
Not today.
Doug.
Hi, everyone. Doug Reed, Zooming from Lafayette, Colorado. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2010 when I was 36. I had DBS 5 years ago, and I'm doing well.
And Doug, it's getting to be a little bit like ski season, so I'm hoping, I know there's reasons why this will be a challenge, but I'm hoping we can get some skiing in together at some point. I know there's some challenges, but I hope we can make it happen. Karen.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here. Nice to see everyone. I live in St. Louis, Missouri. I've been living with Parkinson's since I was 47. I'm 54 now, and very happy to be here with you.
Thanks for being here, Karen. And Kat.
Hi, all. I'm calling in from Estacada, Oregon, and I was diagnosed at the age of 48 in 2015. So going on 10 years.
All right. Well, thanks, Kat, for being here. Thanks to all the panelists for being here, and thanks to the audience for being here. Before we get started on the topic, I just want to end with a quick note about our friend Kevin, Kevin Kwok, who has decided to take some time away from being a panelist on the meetup in order to focus on some other projects he has ongoing. Kevin is really busy. So, I'm so glad that he's shared so much of his time with us. He's been a part of this group since the earliest days of the Young Onset Parkinson's Council. And, he's helped a lot of people, including me personally, over the years. And so, I just wanted to acknowledge that, Kevin's going to be taking some time away. And I hope, and I think Kevin hopes, too, that he'll join us again at some point in the future. The topic for today is the ways that we've found support in our communities. And there's a lot of ways that can happen. So we'll talk about some of those ways today. And I want to just draw attention to a great question. I think it's a great question we received as a result of our pre-meetup email. Someone said, wrote us this question. They wrote, how can I give and take support for and to people in the community without placing a burden on them? I mean, that'll be a sort of undercurrent, I think, for this conversation. But to start us off, I think, given that it's Family Caregiver Awareness Month, maybe let's start with talking about care partners in the traditional sense of a family member who is usually or maybe often a live-in member of the family who provides you with support. And there are challenges and there are really great benefits to that.
Yeah, I could take off from that. I think there's no question about it that the burden of this is carried by our care partners as well. I mean, we the people afflicted with a condition, but with the support and our care partners, there's no question that the burden is felt and carried by them. And as I went through my own grieving process, I think our care partners go through that as well. And I think when I reached the date of my acceptance, I could start living with Parkinson's and no longer against it. I think they go on the same journey, through denial, through bargaining, through all of the depression, and then hopefully getting to acceptance. But I think there has to be a period of time for them to go through it. And I think in my case, it's reflective of how I've lived my life. I think that is reflected in the care and the support. It's a challenge, but I think you've got to give space to them as well. I'm very lucky in the sense that I've got a wife who keeps her beady eye on me 24/7 to make sure that I'm exercising and eating and doing all the right things, which I appreciate and really I wouldn't be in this position. So I'm very thankful. And I hope that people who don't have care partners at least have extended help to get the same support in the community and through friends. But that's when I thought about this topic, I looked at, I it took me back to my marriage vows, because it says in sickness and in health. It doesn't say sickness or in health. There's an expectation in our marriage vows that there is the burden that a relationship has when it comes to living with a chronic illness like we have.
And I don't have a care partner. I'm divorced and I have two kids, a son and daughter, but they're both busy teenagers. And so I don't rely on them. And because I don't have a care partner, I've been forced to get involved. And fortunately for me, the wonderful Davis Finney Foundation is only about 15 minutes away from my house. And when I've needed help, people at the foundation have stepped up and helped me. Sorry, I'm getting emotional.
Well, Doug, I would say this about what you just said, and everybody at that at headquarters is so delighted when we get to spend time with you. So, it's not a burden from my perspective. It's just a joy to get to spend time with you. So, thanks for being a part of our time too.
I think I'd like to segue into what I was thinking, Doug. You're a big part of my support network. Sometimes people don't realize the people that are the impact they have on other people, and it can be small things, or you could not know someone for a long time, and people connect in all kinds of ways. I think that giving people permission and giving yourself permission to be present for one another is important. And, I think that we build relationships for lots of different reasons. My feeling about getting involved in my community in being involved with the Davis Finney Foundation, it's just one part of my community that I'm involved with, but that's what keeps me coming back. I've been affiliated with the organization since 2019, and I'm not going anywhere, and I know they're not going anywhere. And that's important to me. I've never felt the way about my friendships with people in my life the way I have about my Parkinson's friends. And maybe it's because the disease isn't going anywhere. And I know that we're bonded from the beginning till the end because I've invested myself in these relationships. And it was small steps at first. I was kind of afraid of the community. I was afraid of what I saw in other people. I wasn't sure where I fit into it. And I wasn't sure how much I wanted to be a part of it because it was intimidating to me. And now it feels like a safe landing place, and I know that no matter what I bring to the table, no matter what I bring to my relationships with people, that it's a safe space. And I have sort of different kinds of relationships in my Parkinson's community. I have relationships which are less intimate and personal. I know someone, and I'm a sort of more than an acquaintance because we interact like this in a pretty intimate way. And then I have relationships that I've developed with what I call my Parkinson's friends. And, there isn't a day that goes by for me that I don't pick up the phone and talk to another woman with Parkinson's. That is part of my daily routine. And that didn't start out that way. And it took a little bit of risk. I found that I needed a lot, and I had to learn how to be a good listener to someone else. And in doing so, I found that those relationships have come twofold, two directions for myself. And, I just have now a sense of trust in this community that it's always going to be here.
Karen, that was awesome. I'm very blessed to have a husband who has been on this journey with me, and I really loved what Larry said, in sickness and in health. And Yes, I'm dealing with Parkinson's, but in life, and Doug, I don't have to tell you this, there's other things that happen, like broken bones, and we've been there for each other for those things as well. And I think we've it's hard. I'm not going to say that it's not, but I think that one of the silver linings for my husband Ken and I are that we've really learned how to talk about the hard stuff. And he's good at calling me out on things also, and I him. It works both ways. And I think it takes work to talk about the hard stuff. And I think that I'm hopeful that we are going to make it through more of the hard stuff that's to come. And I hope we have many, many years of good stuff and hard stuff together. But I think that may be the silver lining. And like you, Karen, I couldn't navigate this process without the Parkinson's community. The Davis Finney Foundation has been enormous in helping me stay healthy. I got to meet you. You and I met very early in our journey and had a lot in common. And like you, I seldom go a day without at least texting or reaching out with a good friend with Parkinson's. And I think that also, even with a good supportive partner, I try not to overdo the sharing. You and I know have talked about this, the trying to spread that out so that I'm not dumping consistently on one person. So anyway. This group means a lot to me, and I thank you all for showing up.
I love what you had to say, Kat. I realized something yesterday. My husband actually came to me and shared something with me about my symptoms. I was thinking that my symptoms that bothered him had to do with my moving slow or not being able to travel or work anymore or do some things. It wasn't that at all. He said, the toll that your anxiety has upon me is huge. It's like your whole personality has shifted and the way you go through each day. And he brought up a really small example of being at the hardware store preparing for Friendsgiving and trying to find the right tray to put the turkey on so we could collect the turkey drippings so I can make gravy. And he didn't understand why I was so anxious about the seemingly unimportant thing. And I think it was because it's so hard for me to cook, to put a meal together, to entertain a crowd. And I was trying to think, like, how can I do this easier and smarter? And the funny thing is, I put all this anxiety into this seemingly small thing, and then I never even used the drippings because I was so anxious that I had to cook the gravy 3 days ahead of time. So I bought turkey pieces and I made all the stock and gravy. And I felt like just lucky that I could still cook a Thanksgiving meal and invite some people over. But it was all about me having to get the turkey gravy in the right pan and to go to the store, and we were doing it all for me, and it just never even occurred to me. And then afterwards I felt so selfish and self-centered and very self-absorbed, and it was really just my best effort at trying to function. And I was burdening my husband in a way that I didn't even recognize. And it came to me when he said, my husband's very patient. And he said, I almost left you in the store and went out to the car. And I was like, what? How could you be so upset in that moment? And I had no clue because we're really in tune with each other, but I was out of tune. And so, that makes me take pause and realize that I have to find a way to manage that unmanageable symptom on my own. He can't fix it for me. I know that sounds strange, but I have to find a way because it happens every day for me.
Yeah, that's an interesting nuance to this because on the one hand, there's so many ways that you can find support, and I think we've talked about a lot of them already. I mean, but from a care partner who is, living with you the community around you that you build or that you are lucky to be near that, and you didn't directly try to build. That's not fair. I think it's always an ongoing active effort to build a community, and that's maybe the point of an important point to discuss. But there's another way in which sometimes the support is more general than you might think. It's about having people in your life that give you courage and inspire you to try. And even though they may not be able to directly help you with the thing that you are challenged with right in the given in any given moment. So, what support looks like, I guess, is what I'm saying, I guess, is that what support looks like is different at different times of one's experience and in different places where one exists. So,
I think that there's something about growing a community, but then also maintaining a community. And I think as we navigate this disease longer and longer, that looks different for me than it did when I was first diagnosed. When I was first diagnosed, I was signed up for 6:30 boxing, high intensity workouts 4 days a week. And I showed up. I did that for, I think, 7 years. And from that group, and then COVID hit. So it changed for a lot of us during that period. But I think that's, there have been some splinter groups that have splintered off of that. Like Karen, I have what we call coffee chat on Monday mornings. We get together and we bring our tea or coffee, and there's four of us. We used to box at 6:30 in the mornings, and our lives have kind of gone different directions, but we still show up on Zoom. And I think, and then I'm involved with some other groups. I started a support group and ran it until COVID hit with another young onset woman. And Ken, my husband, ran a care partners group. From that, we split off and we've got our resources from that. So I think it changes over time. And I think just like our Parkinson's changes, just like it changes for our partners too. They may dip in and out of different support. I know Ken and I rely on, at times, counselors or other friends and resources to help bolster us up so that we're not doing it with each other solely also. And or our children. Our children are now adults, but they were teenagers when I was diagnosed, and I didn't want to lay that on them either. So, and I encourage them to talk about it and support and get support for themselves. And it's not just about my Parkinson's. Our son has type 1 diabetes, and everybody's got something, right? And so how we support each other in the world becomes really important. And I think finding compassion for one another, I think I have more compassion than I used to for everybody who's going through a tough time. This time of year, anxieties and emotions are high, right? And for lots of reasons, and they will continue to be. This season will come again for us, and if we're lucky. So,
I think it's a big topic. This, I want to also elaborate on a few things, if I could. Obviously. The first question I had was how my relationship would change with respect to my spouse, with respect to my kids. But I went for the high road in the sense of, full and frank disclosure. I've got this. I don't know what it's going to do to me. I'm going to continue living my life as best I can. So it wasn't sort of, I chose to disclose both in the workplace and also with my family. But I did see some changes, not in my immediate family, but in my friends, the way they reacted to the news, how our friendships have changed. But it took me about 2 years. I was living a recluse for about the first 2 years. Then I managed to get going, but I only started reaching out to the Parkinson's community at about 7 years into my journey. And I just wish that I would have done that a lot earlier, because immediately up in Canada, I reached out at the time to Parkinson Canada and the support groups and went to meetings and felt at ease from day one. And there's still things that I talk to that group about that I don't speak to my spouse about. They are not that I'm keeping a secret, but I just think that there's a natural affinity and a bond that we all have. that we all know what we're talking about. And I think the strength in the community can never be underestimated.
I had a really, this is a personal share. I've done some pieces on the Davis with the Davis Finney Foundation about this, so it's not a surprise if you've seen them. But I was very surrounded by this community and related to my Parkinson's and other difficulties. I became very isolated from my community. I had a mental health crisis that occurred. I've been sober my whole life. I had a relapse after many years of sobriety. I had a real great face on the outside about how well I was coping with everything. And behind the door, you know, I was struggling deeply. And it culminated in a manic episode, which landed me in a hospital that was triggered by drug use and combination of my medication for Parkinson's. I had a very difficult time, and I also was a member of AA. And so when I relapsed, I was cut off from AA because I didn't want to go to AA when I wasn't sober. And I, not because the community didn't support me, but I was actually cut off from my family because they didn't know how to support me and I was quite ill. And I was cut off from this community and I was super embarrassed about the impact that my behavior had on other people. And I saw a comment in the chat from Jennifer about other people not knowing how to handle our behaviors. I don't think it was, maybe it was specifically referring to this, but I had a massive meltdown. And that is why I stepped away from the panel for a period of time, because I was an original member of the panel. It took me 2 years to really overcome that episode and come to a better place. But sometimes that feeling of the damage that I felt that I did through that period of my life was really difficult to accept. And, you know, I heard you talking, Larry, about compassion. For me, it was a lot of self-compassion because, you know, I have a therapist. That's part of my support network. And she said, if this had happened to someone else, Karen, would you have felt the way you feel about yourself in terms of compassion for that other person? I said, absolutely not. I would be completely compassionate and completely welcoming. I mean, I would have boundaries if that person were ill and had to have certain structure to that relationship, but I need to show myself the same compassion. And I think we all have to do that inside and outside of our relationships. So just wanted to throw that out there.
And I just want to emphasize the need, the importance to be involved. I volunteer at the foundation. I go to Pedaling for Parkinson's. I go to support group meetings, and every time I've needed help, all I've had to do was ask. And I've had people in my Pedaling for Parkinson's classes volunteer and come up to me and say, hey, if you need help getting to appointments, I'm here for you. And I isolating and not being around people in my Parkinson's community is horrible.
Kat, you're muted.
Muted, Kat.
It's probably sometimes a good thing that I'm muted, but I just want to say, Doug and Karen, how brave. Thank you. That's some brave sharing right there. And I think sometimes we're hardest on ourselves. There's shame sometimes, and I think there's stigma associated with a lot of what ends up being Parkinson's related, or I also like the term Parkinson's adjacent. I think that's more, you know, symptoms. And I think it's confusing for the people that love us because people don't understand often that that's a part of Parkinson's disease. Often people associate Parkinson's disease with shaking and slowness and rigidity and maybe facial masking, but not necessarily the changes in behavior. And I know it's hard for me. I don't think like I used to. I can't respond in the ways that I used to. It takes a lot of energy to show up and try to present, normally, right? And I also think people get confused because one day they may see us and we look normal. There's my air quotes. And the next day we seem really different. We may be really anxious. We may be kind of self-focused. Our meds may be off, so physically we may look different. And I think it's confusing to people. And I think part of why we all keep showing up to this is we want to try to change even just a little bit of how much shame and stigma we all feel, and to hopefully enlighten some of the people in our world that care about us that this is part of, it can be part of the disease. And we've got to talk about it. It's hard though. It's
Oh.
hard.
Sometimes it's just snap out of it, Larry. Just get going. Just go to gym and all that. But really, it you as you rightly say, Kath, you wake up one day, you bounce out of bed, and everything's great. There's some days where, I can crawl to the washroom because I'm so stiff and sore. But so this is not for the faint of heart. This and we got to take, but I think we've got to be kind to ourselves. I think in the first years, if that would happen to me, I would throw myself into a depression and shut the door and not come out of my lounge or off my couch. But as time has gone on, and I forgot to say that I've been living with Parkinson's for the last 13 years at the beginning. But I have been, and I think with time, and as I've described the step down condition that we have, it gives you time to, develop coping skills and allow yourself to have a period of grieving and coping with the next stage of dealing with the disease. But I think if we're kind to ourselves first, we can, extend that out to our community of support as well, and they react to how we deal with it as well.
We just got a comment that went from the chat to the hosts and the panelists that I think I want to share just to see if we have anything to say about this. The comment was that a person in the audience feels that their partner overreacts to things in their life, and that there may be a lack of trust. It seems like maybe there's a lack of trust, but then the person who commented said that they don't actually think that's true, but it seems like it sometimes. And that they feel sometimes it's better to keep things to themselves, at least until they get a handle on it before they talk to their partner. And this is one of the big challenges, I think, for me too, that I don't know when to bring something up. So I wonder if anybody on the panel has something to say about that, whether it's with a partner that lives with you, that's your spouse or your romantic partner, or whether it's a child or a friend, however this may come up for you. Do you, anybody have a perspective on when to share versus when to take something in on your own and process in isolation? Maybe isolation is too strong, but you know what I'm getting at. Karen, you're muted.
I have the opposite problem because my husband is an introvert and I'm an extrovert. And so the way I process things is I just sort of talk until I land somewhere. And I'm like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. And I think when he hears me talk, he thinks I have like a well-formed idea that came out of my mouth. And it's really just me talking until I figure something out. He doesn't speak about anything until he has it all figured out. He could think on something for a month, and then when he's got it all figured out, he talks about it. And so it creates this sort of difficult communication between us. We've been together long enough that he knows I'm that way, and I know he's that way, but occasionally we bump heads about it. So I've had to learn to take a step back and sort of be more introspective, and he has to learn how to take risk and be more communicative with me.
I think for me, when I was listening to this, or when I was reading the question, I thought, What are the situations in which I might not understand something myself that my partner or anyone that knows me or sees me might understand or might see a pattern that I don't see? And if I don't talk about it, I worry for myself that if I don't talk about things openly, that something that I don't notice might be missed by me that somebody else already sees. And I want to know if there's a pattern that's developing for myself. And I hesitate on this sometimes because I don't want to. This goes back to the original question I raised at the beginning, which is how do you avoid burdening people? Because I don't want to talk about myself all the time, but I also want people to give me feedback on the things they think they're noticing in my behavior, regardless of Parkinson's, but especially because of Parkinson's. I'd rather be ahead of it than behind it.
I think for me that I want to have feedback, but I also don't want to share something in sort of the heat of the moment, and I hope that my partner doesn't either. That we can have some time kind of set aside to talk about what's going on in kind of neutral time, right? Like where we're not both upset about it. Because I find that sometimes I feel wounded initially, or I have a lot of big feelings about something, and I'd rather not start when I'm already feeling in the moment, either anxious or even really excited, because all of that takes energy. And then to try to receive feedback. So, and it's not ever perfect. I mean, it's not like we all don't have moments like Karen. I'm very verbal and I tend to be a verbal processor, and my husband isn't as verbal, and I think it's a dance that we do with one another, and aging, as we age, we change too. Our brain changes, and that happens for both he and I. I'm happy to say I think we're going to make it in March. It'll be our 35th wedding anniversary. And we always say we take it year by year. We'll be up for contract renewal in March, and but I think it's important to take stock of your relationships and to talk about how it's going and how it feels. And before I go see my MDS sometime the week before, usually we set aside some time to sit down to talk about how we think it's going, and so I think it's important. We don't grow otherwise as a human being, right? With or without PD.
I hesitate to say this because I know I've talked a lot, but this is a unique perspective that I bring. My father had Parkinson's. And so I watched my parents navigate their relationship with Parkinson's. And my mom was not a patient human being. She never was. She was always very, she struggled with that with all of us, including my father. And at the end, she was almost abusive to him. And she did the best she could, but it came from a great deal of frustration over the burden that his care placed upon her. And I have such fear about being that for my husband. And so having no children also is an element there. I take care of my mother who has Alzheimer's, and someone had commented about caring for someone with Alzheimer's in their life. And she's in a facility, but she requires so much extra that I do to make her life pleasant. The little things, just making sure that she has those things. And I have a lot of fear that there will be no one there to do that for me. Those are just two things I wanted to throw into the mix, but I really want to hear what others have to say in case there's somebody out there that has that similar experience or caring for someone else with their own health issues. I just wanted to say that.
I think there's a challenge when you care about people and you're also navigating really complicated health issues. And so I think one of the advantages that having a diverse support network gives you, and not only relying on somebody, if you have somebody that's a live-in care partner with you, not only relying on the people that are your family members, but building a community, is that I think it's already been said on this call that there's a certain way in which we all can speak the same language, even though our experiences are so different when we're living with Parkinson's. And I think that if you're only touching base with the people in your life that are your closest connections, your family and your closest friends, I think you run the risk of, we run the risk of having extra tension stacked on top of the health challenges and the issues we're navigating with Parkinson's or whatever health condition we're dealing with, that you further complicate our relationships. So I just want to draw attention to that as a consequence or in follow-up to what you said, Karen, that I think there's an advantage to having diverse groups because it lets you have support in different ways at different times. And that I think helps me navigate challenges that I face with my family and my parents who have their own health issues as well.
I think it's we've got to look at our relationships with our care partners, as well as our relationship. I've been married, I think, 44 years, and every year brings its challenges. We've had, good time, bad time, challenging times, irrespective of Parkinson's. I mean, it's a natural flow. So I think we've got to also give permission to separating what we think is Parkinson's from what natural time does to one's relationship, and deal with that. It may be not related to Parkinson's, but it's related to the natural ebb and flow of a relationship. I think Parkinson's puts a spotlight on matters, and I certainly have Parkinson's as the excuse, but maybe it's not. Maybe you've got to look at ourselves first in our relationship, and then separate whatever that could be from the Parkinson's, because it may not be Parkinson's. It could be just, hey, it's just, this is us.
Yeah. And Larry, don't you think too it takes time and conversation to do that with one another, whether you have a live-in care partner or you don't. I think what you need for support it changes as we change and it evolves. And yes, it's nice. I think it's vital for me, and I've heard so many people comment too, to have a network of people that they know that have Parkinson's because it cuts down on all the dialogue you have to have. I also think it helps our partners to not feel like they are the only ones that can support us, that we do have a broad network. And also, I think the opinions are vital to get a swath of how other people manage things, I think is important. And even those of us with partners, we may be alone one day, in the natural order of things. And what does that look like? And I think it's important to think about some of those things. And I think I encourage my partner to think about that too, because I think it's life. It's how life evolves. So, and it's hard. It's hard to think about, but it helps me to know that we've talked about it or touched on it. And it gives me a level of freedom to know that, okay, we kind of set up that dialogue. I know that when my parents, I took care of my mom as she navigated cancer and at the end of her life. And it was really important for me to know what her wishes were and to honor those as best I could. My dad too had Parkinson's and died in hospice care at home a few years ago, and I knew what he wanted, and the knowing gives me some level of comfort. What I can do about it changes, and as Parkinson's progresses, it changes. But it doesn't mean that I can't help access resources for friends or family if I know what they want. I may not be able to physically be up all night taking care of people. Karen, you can relate to this as a trained nurse practitioner. That's my instinct, to take care of everybody. I can't do that anymore. But how can I help them meet those needs?
That's what I was going to ask the panel and the audience too. It's exactly what you're saying. How do we, as loving partners to our partners, take care of them when we feel we're limited in ways. I'd really love to hear because I need help with that, I believe.
Yeah. This is a tough topic we're talking about, tough subject. I mean, we're into, therapy here, really.
And just for the disclaimer, none of us are licensed therapists, at least that I know of. Larry, I don't know.
Talking about it, but we need the therapist.
I know for me, I've been encouraging my husband to think about all the things that he wants in his retirement and try to be supportive of those things. I know that he has expressed an interest and started to train as a volunteer firefighter. And I'm so excited for him and proud of him and proud for him that he's pursuing that. And I need and want him to feel comfortable pursuing something that leaves me alone some. And if in time, it's not okay for me to be alone. We can plan for ways to cover that base. But I think it's important that our care partners are able to fulfill some things that they want to do. They need to be encouraged and supported to do that. It's partly how they find their community also. And we talk about what we want out of life from here until, if we only have 15 more minutes, what's that going to look like? If we have 15 more years or, 20 more years, what does that look like? Again, back to the communication part, and knowing what his dreams are and his hopes are important to me. So I don't know if that helps or,
Karen
still.
Rosenbaum put in the chat, it's very difficult to ask for help. And I agree with that 100%. When I know I need help, it's anxiety inducing. All I can say is spread the need around, ask different groups for help when you need it at various times.
And that's important relative to the idea of how do we help our care partner or the other people in our lives too, because that's something they have to do too, and we have to encourage that for them to be living the lives they want to live. I think that's related to what Kat was just saying. So it works both ways, I think. And Doug, I want to note something about what you just said too, which is that you may be that may be your experience for yourself that you may find that challenging. But one thing I would say about Doug in particular is that when I've called Doug, Doug always responds like really quickly. And I think that's an example of a way to build a community is that, being present for people when they reach out to you, and that makes the network work. And I just want to thank Doug for that.
I also would love to share that when you're having your own struggles and somebody reaches out for you to help, it gets you out of your own brain and your own moment. And I think that that's a really important part of community also, that showing up for others has been a real gift for me. Volunteering for this panel, for example, is I feel that way. I hear about other stories. I want to show up and be of service. And I think it is a give and take. And I think it's beautiful for both sides of that give and take. I also think that learning how to ask and how to ask for help. Somebody else said in the chat earlier that sometimes there's comments that her husband doesn't do enough or doesn't respond as quickly. I think that learning how to navigate that also is important. Practicing asking for help, talking about what that means if I ask for help, and also not wanting too much help. I don't want people, my husband taking over or my kids taking over. I can still do these things. I'm slower. I may be less efficient. I may drop things more. More things may break, but I'm still doing it. And to back away from that takes away some of my autonomy and my self-worth. So, it goes both ways. Asking for help is hard. It's humbling and it's part of the human experience. We all need help sometimes. And I would just like to echo that, Doug. You are one of the finest humans I've ever met. And it's an honor to be a friend to you. I can't help picking you up at the airport because I'm a ways away, but I will pick up the phone. And like Karen, you've reached out several times, even if I haven't called, always called you back. It's always amazing to get a message on the voicemail that somebody called and was thinking of me. And that's beautiful. That holds a lot of space when we're struggling.
So I want to take a quick, we're approaching the end of the hour, and I want to make sure we follow through on what we're saying right now, and listen to the questions we received from the audience a little bit, because we got some that I wanted us to look at before we got these questions before the meetup began, and I just want to walk the walk and talk the talk. We're talking the talk, we're going to walk the walk. So here's a question that came in before this session began that relates to the topics we were just discussing. And the question is this. A listener wrote in, how do I get support from my family members, especially my children, who do not want to accept or talk about the challenges or the fact that I have Parkinson's? They think that by ignoring it or refusing to talk about it or changing the subject or even telling me that they only want to talk about what's going on with them, that this is helpful. And this is challenging. It's a really hard question. Whether it's your children or your friends, I certainly experienced this with some of my friends where they don't necessarily seem like they want to talk about it. And I get it. I don't really want to talk about it sometimes either. But, anyway, so what do we think? How can you navigate that challenge when people don't seem to want in your life that you really care about, don't seem to want to be a part of this part of your life?
I think it takes me back to my opening remarks that I think you've got to give them time. I do think, as I said, that the family, the friends, the extended support group, there's a period of grieving that they go through. When it comes to kids, I mean, I thought my relationship with my children would change, and how would that change? How would they perceive me as a father, with Parkinson's? And I do think they had to go through their own grieving process. So I think it's again giving them time to get to that point of acceptance, because we live with it, and will for hopefully a number of years. They've got to come to terms with that, and they reflect how we're living our lives with Parkinson's as well. So I would say give them time to get to their own point of acceptance.
And somebody in the chat just wrote also that some people will just remain in that position, and I think that that's okay. If that, I mean, it's not optimal, but if that's the position they're in, I think that has to be honored, especially if you're going to in a situation where you're going to maintain a relationship with these folks. In this particular case of the question, they were someone's children, but.
Larry, I think that's so sound. And on the flip side of that, at some point, you may really feel the need to share what's going on, and even to allow some space for that in maybe a one-on-one with a kiddo that may be really, and kiddo meaning a young child, it's one thing, but an adult child is a different thing. And with an adult child, with my adult children, would choose to, hey, can we go get a cup of coffee? I have some things I really want to share with you. And I would share, I really notice that you never want to talk about what's going on with my Parkinson's. And I would do I messages. I really miss connecting with you. I am feeling like there's this real big part of my life that I can't share with you. Is there a way that we can set aside some time to safely talk about it? Or do you have questions about it? I think those relationships, even though it's an adult and an adult child, they do go both ways. And it's okay to have a need as a parent. And it's okay to address that with your adult child if you want to have a mutual relationship with them. But I wouldn't do it around the table with everybody there, because then there's, you know, there's all the family dynamics. Everyone wants to chime in. But I think it's okay to be human and to be a parent. But maybe doing it at a time where it's in a safe kind of neutral space.
As usual, Kat, you are far more considerate than I am. So,
what would you do?
Well, no, I think you just took a more reasonable approach than I was describing, just by saying if somebody has a position, that's just the position they're in and you can't force them out of it. But you took a different approach and you said, well, yeah, that's true. Maybe you can't force them, but you can be gentle in approaching the conversation with them and be considerate of their experience and do it at another time where maybe it's a little bit, feels a little bit more accessible. So I want to draw attention to another question, because we're coming up on it, and I really want to be attentive to our audience. And so another question we got was, I think it relates to this topic that we've been in a certain way. I've had great success with intentional exercise. I try to be very active each day, but I get a lack. Lately, I have had a lack of energy and motivation to go to the gym and exercise. What has helped you get out of that kind of rut and start exercising again? And I would extend this to say doing anything you really want to do. And I think this relates to the topic of how do we help our care partners and other people in our lives do what they want to do.
Apathy.
It's hard.
It's really hard.
The only thing I've done is schedule. That's my solution is get things on the calendar and say, we are doing this. And if we, and then it's, you got to pick and choose which things you put on the calendar in that way. But that's the only thing that seems to help me is saying, I go to the gym this day. This is what I do. I wake up and I brush my teeth. I do those things. I also go to the gym. And it's just on the calendar and you do what the calendar says. And I think that's true for the care partner too, is that you have to make the space to do the things that you need to do for yourself. And if it's exercise in our case, then we have to make that a thing that we are inflexible with. That's the only thing I've got.
I haven't done this exactly, but having a workout buddy can help you motivate to get to the gym.
Making a commitment to somebody else, like Doug, you're more likely to do it if you committed to them rather than yourself.
What I have in mind is don't think of the big picture, break it down. So if put on your gym clothes and you may not go to gym, you know, put on your runners or your shorts, but stay in the house. You know, the next day, maybe do something more, and record how you feel when you put on your sneakers. You know, are you energized? Because that kind of feeling you can latch onto and maybe build on that. So take little steps. It's this is not a race. This is a marathon. And as long as you can keep building those habits incrementally, then you are on your way. You know, I wouldn't necessarily run a half marathon the first day of exercise. But certainly get going with your plan.
I'd like to, I don't know about any of the rest of you, but I would love to record Larry's voice and just hit play when I'm having trouble because I love the accent. Larry cheering me on would do it. I would do it.
The accent is fine. The coherence may be a bit suspect.
Well, the message is pretty strong too. I think incremental steps are an important, you know, don't think you're going to go out and run the marathon today. Don't think you're necessarily going to hit all the boxes you wanted to hit with your workout. That's a great observation, Larry. Thanks for sharing that.
Buy a chainsaw. Do something different. You know, moving is moving, right?
Sure, that's exactly right.
So we're at the hour, and I think we'll wrap up. I guess I would just want to close by saying that we don't have a meetup planned for December. So our next meetup is in January, and that will be January 16th. We'll really look forward to seeing you after the new year, and thanks for being here with us today. And take care of yourselves and take care of each other.